All right, guys, pictures up.
Pictures up.
Pictures up.
Let's roll sound.
Rolling.
Rolling.
Sound speeds.
Camera speeds. Two. Awesome. Take two. Mark.
Set up.
And
action.
Welcome to the Penn Cinema Podcast, your behind-the-curtain connection for movie news and reviews. Now, here are your hosts, Penn Ketchum and David Moulton.
Welcome to the show. I'm David Moulton.
I'm Penn Ketchum.
Hey, Penn, how you doing this week?
I'm all right. You know, we have show notes.
Yeah.
Since we're professionals.
Oh, of course.
And grown-ups. And I'm a little interested to see how this episode goes because I've glanced over the notes.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I've even contributed to the notes.
Mm.
As you know, it's a joint effort. We share a document. We, work on it all week and print it out. I've scoured these notes.
Oh, really?
Yes. And there's nothing in there about Dune.
Well, I don't know. We got some... some listener write-in from a Penn Ketchum. There's a Dune video game coming out.
Perfect.
That was the only Dune news that I saw this week,
right,
courtesy of you.
Let's try to have a show anyway.
I don't know if it's even possible. What's the point? Well, let's get into the news for this week. Hotel Transylvania 4 is slated for Wednesday, December 22nd, 2021. Does this franchise do well for itself?
Yeah.
Okay.
So my position on this is like, okay.
I knew it would be.
I feel like Pete Davidson, okay, so what? But I will say, I think that's my only comment about that is like December 22nd. That's like a Star Wars date or an Avatar date or... I don't know, a brilliant Spielberg movie date or, some kind of massive Christmas release should be coming out on December 22nd. And I'm not to me, Hotel Transylvania should be opened in late July, especially when it's like the fourth title.
Mm.
That should be like end of the summer. You've seen all the good movies, and it's like the kids are bored. You can't believe they're not back in school yet. My God, how much longer till they go back to school? And then, there's a new Hotel Transylvania movie. Are they still making them? Like, oh, yeah, there's a fourth one. Oh, it's going to be great. Let's go. And then you go.
I can take a nap. The kids can watch a movie.
Exactly. So really, I could care less.
Yeah.
But if we're going to talk about it, my question is, I don't think December 22nd. Here, I'll go a little bit out on the limb. I have a two-part answer. I don't think it's a good date, and I do think it'll move. I wouldn't be surprised to see if this either gets pulled up to late July of 2021 or pushed out to the spring of 22.
See, my theory, it's Christmas themed.
Oh, okay. Well, if that's the case, then I take back everything I just said.
Yeah.
Because that might make sense.
Because, okay, so I've only seen the third one. I thought it was fine for a kid's movie. And it was like it had nothing to do with Halloween. It was like on a cruise or whatever.
Right.
So very easily.
Right.
Holiday theme.
Okay. If that's the case, then I think it's great. And it, you could make the case. I mean, no matter what else is opening on December 22nd of 21, there's going to be more than one title. Like even if it's Avatar, there's going to be another title.
Yeah.
And it might as well be Hotel Transylvania 4 if it's Christmas themed.
That's assuming that Hotel Transylvania 4 is an Avatar.
I didn't want to bring that up so early. You can play that a little closer to my chest.
Moving on, Rami Malek, probably saying that wrong, I'm horrible, is allegedly in final negotiations for Bond 25.
I love it.
I think he's great.
Yes.
Why not? If he's the villain, Shatterhand, right, is the name?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, take a cane to his hand, make it all shattered. I want this theme.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's really exciting. I love when a sort of Hollywood franchise
mm-hmm.
gets really quality actors. Didn't he just get an Oscar? I believe he just got an Oscar.
Yeah.
And I believe it was... I believe we all fell in love with him. It was, I don't want to say it was his coming out party because that implies that it was his first big title, but it was sort of a really big moment for him. And I thought he handled it perfectly. He sort of cemented, I was already a fan like everybody else, but to me, this sort of cemented him as an A-list kind of guy.
Yeah.
And so for him to, you know, I love when a franchise gets a really quality actor or actress, much like Brie Larson in Captain Marvel, which we'll have to talk about in a little bit. But when you really get high quality actors and actresses in these franchises, it just elevates the storytelling to a whole nother level. It's great.
Now, he was that robot TV show.
Yeah.
He's the star of that,
yeah.
Right? People
yep.
love. I've
right.
yet to get into it, but I hear it's amazing.
Yeah.
So cool. Very cool. Well, the last thing on my list here, and this will go into other things later, but Hellboy has received an R rating for strong bloody violence and gore.
Throughout.
Not just in one right. scene.
I love when they put that qualifier on there. Strong language throughout.
Throughout.
Or in this case, strong bloody violence and gore.
Gore.
So we're drawing a distinction between bloody violence and gore. I'm going to have to do some research and find out what's the bloody violence is just blood, and gore is like you see flesh ripping off bones in typical Hellboy fashion.
I would imagine like bloody violence would be blood splashing everywhere, and gore would be like arms on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Throughout.
Throughout. He just carries an arm around.
Awesome. And language. I'm a big fan of language.
And,
well. Yeah, that's great.
Hey, good for them. There's a Red Band trailer we'll talk about a little bit later. So what do you got going on your end?
Well, we talked last time at length about Netflix and Roma.
Have we?
I believe we squeezed it in between Dune news.
Okay.
And I made the comment that Green Book or that Roma should have been nominated for an Emmy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's really sometimes do you ever like get this where you hear something and then you really feel the same way, so you repeat it?
Right.
And then other times you genuinely have your own organic opinion,
mm-hmm.
you know, your own like this thought crossed my mind free of any, you know, whatever. Well, my Emmy comment was completely organic.
Okay.
So it was really exciting for me when Scott Gimple sent us the link, you know, that said Spielberg said that Roma should have got an Emmy. You know, because I thought, hey, that's exactly what I said, you know. And when I said it, I mean, whatever, believe me or not, but the truth is I said it completely. I hadn't heard it somewhere else. You know, it was completely my own opinion. So obviously me and Steven Spielberg have even more in common than previously. Than previously thought.
When you read the article, did you run around just like telling everyone that you could?
Yeah,
you were validated.
Yes. See, I was right.
I've been telling you.
So I thought what was interesting about that was something I learned. I think I alluded to the fact that Roma had spent like crazy,
mm-hmm.
you know, campaigning for the Oscar. But now the numbers are sort of out there and becoming more and more public knowledge. And they spent literally 10 times. So Green Book spent about $5 million wooing the Oscar voters,
okay.
the Academy members. And so $5 million, pretty good chunk of change. That's probably a lot of billboards and a lot of stuff around L.A. and probably some parties and stuff like that. Roma spent $50 million, 50.
$50
million. $50 million. That's not marketing. That's just Oscar campaign.
Stunning. Now, I can't say if this is 100% true, but I recall learning at some point that like these things can include like extenuous gifts.
Oh, yeah.
And like personalized gifts to these people who are like,
yeah.
that have nothing to do with the movie. It's just
right.
like throwing stuff at them.
Right.
And by the way, this is from Roma.
Yeah. Here's like a Rolex watch. And I'm not saying this happened, but like you could theoretically buy a bunch of Rolexes that said Roma on it.
Right.
And then send them to Academy voters.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then where that sort of that same topic sort of flows is our topic of The Irishman, based on one of my favorite books called I Heard You Paint Houses.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is so Roma did not win Oscar despite their incredible spending. And now – and so you guys were all sort of teasing me about like, well, Irishman's coming out and are you going to get it or book it or do your thing? And now they're saying that Irishman's going to get a proper theatrical release. So the question is, like, does this mean what everybody's saying is at least at this point in time, Hollywood has won the Netflix battle? Not that the war is over, mm-hmm. but for 2019, Netflix releasing The Irishman in theaters like a normal theatrical release is a good sign for Hollywood.
I agree. I read his article was for the AV Club, right? Yeah. I think I read a similar article at Vanity Fair.
Right.
And
he must have been somewhere and like made a speech or done a Q&A or something, because when I went back to find that article, I just Googled Steven Spielberg Netflix, mm-hmm. and like 16 different articles all saying the exact same thing came up.
Okay. All right. So I don't know if specifically the article he linked to us said this, because I had read the one from Vanity Fair, and that one made a similar point to what I was saying about how a lot of these foreign films and stuff have even smaller releases, and they still – so like where do they draw the line? And I guess it's what they have to really – because if they draw it too hard, they're going to cut out like a section of films that have normally been a part of the Oscars. So I think it's an interesting thing to watch.
Yeah. No, it's definitely interesting. There's a lot more on this, you know. It'll be fun to watch over the next few years.
Yeah.
See how it plays out.
For sure.
But the fact of the matter is nobody knows how to make money better than Disney, right? Right. And Disney does not screw around with streaming. I mean, I know they're trying or whatever, you know, but when they make a big movie, they release it in the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
Best way for a studio to make money on a movie is to release it in theaters. Unless there's another agenda like Netflix trying to promote their subscription. So that tells you that they're not in the movie business, they're in the subscription business.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like they're using a quality film as a marketing tool for a different product, which in my mind really cheapens the whole experience.
Hmm. Interesting.
Just saying. Yeah. I'm just saying. Okay. I have two other pieces of news.
Okay. Let's hear it out.
Yeah. One of them is just like, whatever. It's interesting. It's you know, we're going to talk about it more later. But Avengers. Did you hear there's a big Avengers movie coming out?
Is this new? I heard there's a Dune movie coming out.
Like, I think it's a beginning game or something like that. Yeah.
The first one.
Right. That's next year. The tracking on Avengers is off the charts already. So the movie industry, a certain number of weeks prior to a release, they start tracking interest.
Okay.
And so then, you know, you start getting tracking numbers and you start seeing that. And normally you don't really pay attention until a few weeks out. But on the bigger movies, everybody starts looking early. And we're now sort of officially in that window.
Now, tickets aren't on sale yet, are they?
Correct.
Okay.
Right.
So this is just like, I guess, social media.
They account for all kinds of stuff, right? Social media, trailers, they compare it to previous Avenger releases, and they compare it to, like, for example, what's going on with Captain Marvel, which is like a week away, you know what I mean, and all that sort of stuff. So they take on an incredible amount of information and try to make sense out of it and then start putting numbers to it. It's kind of like Vegas. You know, as soon as the Super Bowl wins, they start taking bets on who's going to win the next year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, certainly a favorable indication for anybody who's betting on Avengers.
Whoa. And
my last piece of news, I saved the heaviest for the last. I don't mean to get all emotional here, but yeah.
I'm ready. I'm already sitting down.
Zoinks. Scooby-Dooby-Doo. Now, this is one of those movies like... I read the article. I read the news, like the headline, and I was like, wait, what? They're making a Scooby-Doo movie? Like, my first thought was, they're making a Scooby-Doo movie. And then my second thought was like, oh my God, they're making another Scooby-Doo movie? So apparently, the guy who did the voice of Shaggy is named Matthew Lillard, something like that.
Okay.
I never heard of
him. Not the guy who played him, but the guy who...
No, actually, I believe it is the guy who played him.
Okay, the last live action
one. Right, the last live action was Matthew Lillard. And apparently, he didn't get the role. And apparently he found out when the studio announced the cast of the next Scooby-Doo movie, and it was somebody else. And I think Will Forte or whatever is the voice of Scooby-Doo, but then some other guy you know, who I'm probably embarrassing myself because it's probably like somebody super cool, but some other guy got the role. The reason why I mention this is because I love nothing more than when people get expressions wrong.
Right? Okay.
So this guy Matthew posts on Instagram that, you know, this is a hell of a way. So he found out that he didn't get the role when the studio posted the cast, like announced the cast, and it wasn't him, right? So that's a that's an unfortunate way.
They could have told him ahead of time.
I'm just saying, right?
Yeah.
So he was rightly jerked, you know. So he fires off this sort of snarky Insta post. And what he was trying to say was, thanks a lot, Hollywood. You never cease to amaze me. Right?
Uh-huh.
And that's like, okay, good heavy sarcasm. Like, that would have been fine. But what he wrote was, thanks a lot, Hollywood. You never cease to amaze me. Which, like, the only thing funnier than somebody screwing up an expression is when they're trying to be, like, real indignant or, like, sarcastic or something. And
did you see anybody calling him out on it?
I did not. I have to go back and look, but I love it. I love it.
That's great.
But that's not the only wrong expression I noticed this week, David.
Oh, no. I feel like this is coming at me.
It's coming at you, buddy.
Okay, what did I do?
All right, so we're going to transition and talk about trailers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to talk – we might as well do the headliner. We'll start first with Hellboy 2.
Okay.
Which you had written in our show notes. You wrote, it's Red Band. And you spelled it like banned, like something is banned from the country, right?
Yeah.
Right.
It should be red band.
Band, like B-A-N-D.
B-A-N-D.
Yeah, so this is like a little fun, little interesting fact that some people don't realize. Like, so okay. You know how when you sit down in a movie theater and the preview starts and there's this big green slide that says the following preview has been approved for all audiences? That's called a green band. It has a band. It goes back from when it was film, and it would actually have a green strap, like a green-colored frame. You know, and you could see that it was a green band trailer so that it was safe to you could play it anywhere you wanted. Then if some trailers have explicit language or, for example, strong bloody violence and gore throughout. Right. So those trailers and language, those such trailers, the audience is warned about it because you don't often see this. But when we play those trailers, that slide is not green, it's red.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to draw your attention. You know, this is, and it says the following trailer has been deemed for appropriate audiences, not any audience. So that's why they call it a red band trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And so that leads us right into, so now that's like what I've contributed to the show. Fun fact.
When I put band, I was thinking about the band, like the act of banding the film. When I wrote it, and whatever, I got it wrong.
I just think it's interesting because sometimes we do play. It's rare.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes when we have an R-rated movie, I'm trying to – so like Greta is rated R. I'm not clear why, but we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
So we could have played the Hellboy Red Band trailer on the front of Greta because you feel like if it's an R-rated film, you can play the Red Band trailer.
You might upset someone.
Right.
It's tough. We only have like 10 seconds to get out of the theater if it's going to bother you.
Right. Right.
It's a tough call, I'm sure.
So anyway, let's talk about Hellboy.
Okay. Hellboy, second
Hellboy
trailer.
Hellboy 2, yes.
Yeah. Hellboy trailer 2.
Trailer 2.
Red band trailer. I love Hellboy. I love the comic.
What's not to love?
I know. There's so many things I like about what I see in this movie. And then there's a couple things that scare me,
okay.
That are like prepare your butts for disappointment.
Okay.
And first is Mila Jojova Jurgowitz. Pat almost did a spit take there.
Oh my God! Warn me next time you try to say somebody's name when I won't drink my coffee while you're saying that.
Whatever her last name is, I mean.
I think the arc of her career in general has been a disappointment.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, with Hellboy 2 or Hellboy Red Trailer 2.
Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah. Which I agree with.
And then some of the graphics look very Resident Evil to me. And like, I guess what I mean by that is not finished or video game, like not movie production level. Yeah. Like there's one scene where he's walking down the hall and the camera's like behind them and his tail doesn't look like it fits the color of the rest of his body. Like it is just, it looks like it was put like plopped on there.
Gotcha.
And so, I mean, I guess it comes out next month?
June 7th.
Okay, so we've got a little bit of time for them to like clean it up. But at the same time, it's kind of like they're showing a lot of things. Are they going to clean it up or are they just okay with how it is?
Right.
So I'm going to go see it. I'm probably going to walk out going, that was great. And then, but I kind of feel like I'm going to walk out going, that was great, but I'll never tell anyone to see it because it was great for me because I love the character type of thing.
I have a, you know, one of my pet peeves with movies in general is, and it's most obvious like in a, like a, like sort of a cowboy movie or a shoot 'em up movie, but I hate when 19 bad guys are shooting at the good guy and not one of them can hit the good guy. And then the good guy, like, stuntman rolls out between two pillars, fires off three shots, and kills dead three guys, you know, with three shots. You know, these other 16 guys that are shooting at him can't get it, you know, lay a single hand on him. But somehow he, every single bullet lands perfectly. And, like, that's fine. I get it. It's movies and it's fun. And, you know, like, I'm not, you know, man, I don't, you know, whatever. That was my problem with Hellboy, though. I felt like, is this going to be one of those movies where every single scene, I have a little trouble. I only watched the trailer once.
Okay.
So I didn't, like, study it. I didn't watch it a second time. And I haven't really researched the film yet. But I couldn't tell from the trailer what it was about. It just seemed like every single scene, 25 people were ganging up on him. And obviously he's going to, you know, walk out clean out of every single, you know, confrontation. And to me, like, I don't want to watch 2 hours worth of, you know, craziness.
Yeah. And this is also based off of a story very late in the Hellboy mythos, which I understand that there's, they don't want to, they're like kind of doing the Spider-Man thing where they kind of just want to brush over the origin because it's been done. But I'm almost concerned that it's too far down the line that there's going to be too many like either in things like we need to know about outside or too much stuff will be, information will be rushed. I don't know how else to explain it. It's going to be a little bit too much in there.
Yeah.
So this is a weird one. I mean, I'm excited for it for me as me, but like I'm not excited for it in like the broader sense of a film.
Yeah. So I'm going to open it in theater 12.
tiny theater.
Not tiny, but not theater 5.
Okay. I hear you. All right. Here's another controversial one.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Dark Phoenix. Yeah. We got a new trailer.
Yep.
This movie has been pushed back. It's had reshoots. Marvel bought Fox and thus re-got the rights.
Disney bought Fox.
Disney bought, which owns Marvel.
Right.
Bought Fox.
Yep.
And now they have the rights to X-Men back, but the film was already done. Right. Along with, well, there were two other ones, I think, that are kind of like up in the air. What did you think of this trailer?
Well, I thought it was cool. I mean, just like I thought it was cool. I'm on board. This one I did watch a few times, and I did dig in a little bit because I had to sort of orient myself to like what was going on and what are we talking about and that kind of stuff. And it feels like this is going to be one of those ones where you and some of my comic book friends are going to be sort of wringing their hands over all sorts of inconsistencies and, you know, plot holes and, you know, problems. And, you know, I'm going to be sitting there with a popcorn and some Twizzlers going, oh, man, that was awesome. You know, that's kind of how I feel about it. Like, I thought it was cool. I get it. I mean, I love the cast, you know, so I trust them. I trust Marvel. I trust Disney. You know, so I sort of feel like, yeah, let's give it a go.
One of the things that I'm seeing people are a little bit disappointed with is, I guess they allude to and I think Fox or whoever confirmed it, that Mystique gets killed in it, I guess relatively early on, which makes sense because I think Jennifer Lawrence was kind of like done with the role anyway, so it would make sense if for her to come back for just a little bit.
But you hate that that's already out there.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah. There's a couple things about this. One, I feel like Sophie Turner is wonderful. I mean, I like what she does. I think she's great. I think she's beautiful. But I feel like she's aged up a lot since the last film, at least facially. Like, she looks age-wise much older than the other actors that are playing younger characters. And that kind of is like, I don't know, even though there's nothing that can be done, it kind of bothers me a little bit. But, and then the other thing is just story-wise, it's like we've been down this road before with, what was the other one called? Whatever it was, X-Men 3, the bad one. The one that they retconned away. And it's just like the Dark Phoenix saga is supposed to mean a lot because, I'm going to get nerdy here for a second, the Phoenix is supposed to be a good thing, right? And then it goes bad, and then you have the Dark Phoenix. But with these movies, they skip the whole Phoenix thing, and they just go bad to the bad thing. I don't know. I'm going to see it, of course.
Do you remember when this comes out?
I don't. I feel like it might be June as well. Yeah. It's because they've been delayed it a lot. Right. It's supposed to be this winter.
It should come out in May. It's a May type of title.
Yeah.
But that doesn't sound right.
Right. Well, whatever it is, it'll be interesting to see how it performs. What I've been reading is that they've made it to be like the end chapter of those films. So, but moving on to something a little bit more lighthearted.
Wait, real quick, before we move on from Dark Phoenix.
Sure.
First of all, fun fact.
Okay.
According to my lightning quick research.
Whoa.
Dark Phoenix opens the same day as Hellboy?
Really?
According to Google.
Wow.
According to Siri.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's fun fact. But second of all, I wanted to comment about Dark Phoenix. One of my favorite X-Men moments, and this is going to show you what a big X-Men fan I am, because I'm not. One of my favorite X-Men moments is in Deadpool. Right? When he opens up the mansion and he's like, why are there so few people here? It's almost like the studio couldn't afford a full cast of X-Men, right?
Yeah. Wait, the first one when he says that, or the second one where they're in the closet and they close the door?
No, I'm talking about the first one when he's at the mansion. Yeah. He's like, where is everybody?
Yeah.
That was great. All right, so you want to talk about Detective Pikachu?
Yeah, trailer 2.
Yes.
This is one of those things that, like, if you would have said, what do you think about a Pokemon movie? And I would have said,
piss off.
Why are you talking to me?
Right.
But both of these trailers have made me laugh. And I don't know much about Pokemon, but, like, Ryan Reynolds as Pikachu, he's kind of killing it for me.
I'm 100% on board with this movie.
Okay.
I'm psyched about it.
Yeah.
And I had the same response. Well, first of all, when I saw it on the release schedule, I had to look up what Pikachu was. And then when I saw what it was, I was like, oh, Jesus. Like, come on. Give me a break.
Yeah.
But so I watched a trailer, you know. But, yeah. I mean, I was right away. It reminded me a lot of what's the one with the big buddy? It's like a buddy movie. And, I'm drawing a blank. He's a big white. It looks like the Michelin Man, but he's not.
It looks like the Michelin Man?
Yeah. Oh, shoot. Oh, I'm embarrassing myself again. But anyway,
Is it a comedy?
No, it's like a kid's movie.
Okay. I don't know. I'm just thinking Iron Giant.
Yeah, similar. Something like that. Okay. This Big Hero 8 or Big...
Big Hero 6.
Big Hero 6.
Whatever.
It's an even number.
7, 8, 6, 4.
8, 6, 7, 5, 3, 0, 9, something like that. But yeah, like a big, like almost like a buddy movie where, you know, I love movies like that where the hero's a kid and he's got like a little sidekick buddy. And I think this movie looks really fresh. It reminds me a little bit. I don't want to freak you out because I know means different things to you, but it reminded me of like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. It had a similar feel of like fun and fresh and exciting, and I don't know. I'm down.
I'm totally down. I like that this one focused, the second trailer focuses more on like the whole Pokemon thing.
Right.
And where the first trailer was more like just the idea of only this kid being the only one who understood him, which in some ways it reminds me of Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. It's been a while since we've had anything like that.
How did they never do another Roger Rabbit? Like, someday, you heard it here first. Yeah. Someday when they're poking around the archives looking for a new idea, they're going to be like, let's
next,
do another
next
Roger
week
Rabbit.
We'll be back because right. Space Jam 2.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So Pikachu is in May, which I think is a brilliant release date. I think that's, like, great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. And then the last trailer on board here we have is Stockholm with Ethan Hawke. I just saw this trailer today. Like, I was just double-checking our notes, and it popped up there, and I watched it. This looks great. I love Ethan Hawke.
Yeah.
This looks funny. It probably has a decent amount of drama in it as well. Yeah. This is the story of, I guess, where you get the name Stockholm Syndrome, where these yep. guys robbed the bank, and the people kind of started to side with the robbers. Right. This looks great.
Yeah.
I'm totally on board.
No, I agree 100%. I can't wait. I love Ethan Hawke, and I don't know how to say her name, but Noomi somebody or other, mm-hmm. is the female lead, and she's in all the Girl with a Dragon type of movies.
Is she? Oh, like all of them, even the newer
ones? Oh, no, I'm not saying all of them. I'm saying she's been in some of them.
Oh, okay.
But she was also the girl in this small movie. Did you ever see The Drop?
No.
The Drop, James Gandolfini and Tom Hardy.
Okay.
And I watched this movie, and I was like, who is this Tom Hardy guy? Like, it was.
And this was last week.
No, this was a while back, because obviously it was before Gandolfini. It was long before he died. He was still making movies. It was after The Sopranos ended, but, you know, before he kicked it. And it's this movie Drop, and it's a gangster, like, mafia type of movie, but it's a real drama. It's not a lot of action. I mean, there's some action to it, but it's definitely it's definitely more of an interesting movie, and the conclusion of The Drop is one of the best endings to movies ever. You know, and I always say, like, especially in any movie, but especially one that takes place with like Planet Earth and, you know, our time, mm-hmm. you know, like no science fiction and that type of stuff, but like a mob movie or a drama movie or something like that. The ending is everything, you know. So the ending to this movie is one of the best endings ever, you know, and the detective walks up to Tom Hardy and says, like, they don't ever see you coming, do they? You know, and then it, like, goes to credits, and you're just sitting there, like, with chills. And it's just the coolest movie. It's called The Drop, and I strongly recommend, if you haven't seen it, you know, stream it, get it on Netflix. I don't know where it is, if you can get it wherever, but it's such a good movie.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of it. Well, I mean, how long ago was – she doesn't look that old. She must have been pretty young in that movie.
Yeah. I mean, I forget when Gandolfini died, but it wasn't that long ago. And I would guess The Drop maybe was a 2012 movie.
Okay.
Something like that. We played it here. It was awesome.
Cool.
It's such a good movie.
I have to check it out.
So anyway, we're getting a little sidetracked from Stockholm.
Yeah.
Which I think is going to be great.
Mm. Yeah. I didn't catch a release date for that. Did you see one?
No.
Okay. Well, hopefully it's soon because that looks great. So moving on, how'd the weekend go here at the theaters, man?
Yeah.
What was the hits and misses?
(laughs) 2019 has been a challenging year. Come on, you're killing me. How to Train Your Dragon 3 mm-hmm. Continues to do great. And that was still the number one movie nationally, as it was in all the Penn Cinema locations.
Okay.
Madea Family Funeral, I think that's the official title, that did great, opened well. Everybody who saw it loved it. You know, it was I think they were hoping that it would be it was competing with Dragon's third week. So mm-hmm. they were hoping that Dragon would have dropped off enough that Madea could, you know, jump out and take the top spot, but it did not. The one that everyone, and I saw it coming, and I think after I saw the movie, I knew that I was right. Greta, you know, just barely snuck in the top 10. Mm-hmm. So that is kind of a waste.
You were pretty pumped for this movie, though.
I was.
We'll get into that.
Okay. Yeah. So, no, the weekend, we had a big weekend with How to Train Your Dragon a few weeks ago, and as usual, there's always a lull. I mean, Captain Marvel opens in like 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's always a lull between when you have a movie that's, you know, targeting $160 million opening. Nobody wants to open the weekend before it or the weekend of it. So it was kind of like whatever.
Lego movie's still doing well?
Lego movie's hanging in there, yeah. You know. And the other thing, like a lot of business was people catching up on their Oscar titles.
Okay.
Green Book, you know, was a big favorite. And then they re-released Star is Born with an extra 12 minutes of content.
Mm-hmm.
That did, I had to move that to a bigger theater.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
How did Free Solo do?
Great.
Okay.
Great, yeah.
I had a big group of friends who went to see it, so they were pretty pumped.
Yeah. Free Solo, if you're listening to this podcast before Captain Marvel opens, get yourself in here to see Free Solo if
so
you haven't
good.
Already.
Yeah.
God, that movie is great.
It's so great.
Yeah.
Really. Really go see it. Okay. Well, before we get to our review of Greta, we need to talk about the great debate.
Less filling. Tastes great.
This is...
I feel like I was bullied into this debate.
Whoa. You were the one who was like, next week we're going to talk about this.
I always do that to myself.
Penn over here says that Star Wars...
Penn over here. This guy.
Yeah, this guy. Star Wars 9, the new Star Wars, whatever its subtitle is.
Wait. Just back the train up one second. Mm-hmm. As we head into the debate, we need to define some rules of engagement.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I don't want you acting like you're not totally psyched.
Oh, I'm totally psyched.
You can't be like, Star Wars 9 or whatever they're calling this.
I legit can't remember what it's called, though.
I think it's called Shatterhand.
Shatterhand.
Because of having a Luke with his hand.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Well, the Bond movie is called Shatterhand, and the new Star Wars movie is called Shattered Hand.
Oh, it's going to have a red banded trailer.
Right, exactly. So anyway, now that we're establishing, like, we're both super psyched for both of these movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't want to act like I'm not psyched for Avengers. I'm so psyched for Avengers.
No, I mean, this is like, these are both like opening night things for me.
Right.
So, for sure. Okay, but you said.
Yes, I did. And I stand by it.
Star Wars 9 was going to be the movie of the year.
Yes.
For 2019.
For 2019, I stand by that.
And I said, what?
Incorrectly.
What about Avengers Endgame? All
right? Right? Yeah.
Okay, so I want to hear why you think Star Wars will be the movie of the year. Okay, and now we set some parameters for ourselves before hitting the record button, and that was we're going to go after the four-day opening weekend results.
So,
is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
So the movies, both of these movies will open on a given Thursday night,
mm-hmm.
probably a 7 p.m. Thursday night. And when we come into work on Monday morning, there will be a headline. We'll have to agree on where we look at that headline. But there will be a headline on the computer that says, the computer machine, that'll say something like, you know, Avengers opens to $268 million opening weekend.
Okay.
Right. And then in December, Star Wars will open on a Thursday night and we'll come in on Monday morning and it'll say, Star Wars opens at $272 million opening weekend.
And 38 cents.
And 38 cents. And that's what we're talking about, the opening weekend.
Okay.
So Monday morning, what's the gross? And we're talking domestic gross.
Okay. All right. Now, I want to hear why you think Star Wars movie of the year. Any reasons you have.
Okay.
Any, just throw it at me.
All right, tough guy.
Okay.
This guy. Here's my thing. Now, see, this is so hard to have because I'm psyched for Avengers.
Yeah, you don't have to cut Avengers down.
I have
just
nothing
build
against
up,
Avengers.
Build up Star Wars. Yeah.
I think that Star Wars is a more iconic franchise historically. I think it captures a wider berth of generations. So in other words, all of us that saw it in the 70s and loved it in the 80s and loved to hate it, you know, what was that, the 90s,
yeah.
Right? And we're so excited, you know, when mm-hmm. episode 7 came out, and have loved, you know, some of the stories, the spinoffs. And I think that episode 9 feels like a milestone movie. And I know mm-hmm. Avengers Endgame also definitely feels like a milestone movie for that franchise. But my thing with Star Wars is that it feels like the third trilogy. And I'm sure there will be yet another trilogy, but maybe there won't be, you know, or right. certainly haven't announced plans for one. Maybe they will or whatever, but I just feel like Star Wars captures the wider national imagination, you know. And the other interesting thing to this bet that we have going here, this debate, uh-huh. is that I'm glad that we're doing 3-day opening weekend because Avengers is going to open and run pretty much all year long. Star Wars is going to open and be suddenly Christmas time and have, you know, a wider array of competition. And, you know, then next thing you know, it's January. Whereas Avengers is leading right into primo top shelf movie season.
Yeah.
But I just, to answer your question, like in short, I would say that I think that Star Wars, and part of it is there's fewer Star Wars movies, you know, so there's less saturation. You know, there's less supply, and, you know.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's my thinking. Tell me yours.
Okay.
I see you wrote down all these cryptic notes.
Yeah. So before we agreed on opening weekend, I wrote down the box office.
Wait, I think I can, now that I'm looking at these.
You can probably figure it out.
The Force Awakens ended up with $2.06 billion.
Yeah.
Infinity War, $2.04 billion.
Mm-hmm.
The Last Jedi, $1.3 billion. What's S?
Solo.
Well, Solo, Jesus. We're not putting Solo into this mix.
Okay. Well, no, so here's – I don't know if you notice a trend here with these Star Wars movies. They're going down.
Nah.
Look, well, the Last Jedi made, like, not quite half, but almost half of what The Force Awakens did.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, Solo is really bad comparatively.
Well, you can't put Solo in
it. It's not the same.
That's not yeah. the same. That's like if you're going to do that, you got to throw Thor in there or, you know, some yeah. Captain America movie.
If anything, I think Solo might help because I think anything that came after the Last Jedi, Star Wars-wise, was going to suffer because of the bad taste of The Last Jedi.
Well, also because they opened Solo about 5 minutes after The Last Jedi.
Well, there was that yeah. as well. But I think the reason it might benefit is because now you've got that bad taste out of your mouth.
But I liked The Last Jedi. They killed off Han Solo.
Did you?
Which I didn't, I love Han Solo. No, I didn't want them to kill him off.
They killed him off in The Force Awakened.
Oh, that was The Force Awakened. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Podcast at PennCinema.com if you want to correct Penn on anything.
At least we've established who directed these. Yeah. That was the first podcast.
First podcast.
Episode yeah. one.
So, okay. So there's that. But this is an opening weekend, and I fear that I may lose because of the 4-day window.
Well, do you want to change it? Do you want to change the rules?
No. I'm fine. I mean,
I'm down for a fair fight. I mean, here's part of it is tainted. Part of it is bias. Like, so for example, I do play fantasy football. Uh-huh. And I always pick the guys I like.
Mm-hmm.
Whether
they do good or not.
Right. Like, if I like them, if I like the team, if I know somebody from that city, like whatever, you know. And then the guys in my league are like, I can't believe you just picked those guys. I'm like, oh, no, I like him. He does that soup commercial. So we're sitting here talking about this and – behind you, over your left shoulder, is my Star Wars toys from when I was 6. And on the wall to your left is the pictures of opening night of Star Wars, which was the greatest night in the history of Penn Cinema. I think maybe competing with our actual opening night back in 06. But I just love Star Wars so much. I don't want to believe that Avengers is going to outgrow Star Wars.
Okay.
So screw you. I'm betting on Star Wars.
So here's you were talking about wider audience, and my rebuttal to that is I feel, and this is because I have a friend base that consists of a lot of females who have zero to little interest in Star Wars. However, they will go see Avengers either on their own volition because that's something that they're interested in, or they're more willing to go with their significant other to see a Marvel movie than they are
because they know it's going to be funny and fresh and engaging.
Then they will one of those dumb Star Wars movies that my brother's always watched.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
That's why I feel like there's a demographic of moviegoers that will go see Avengers driving the volume up.
Oh, you might be right.
Comparatively, you've got a lot of people that want to see Star Wars, us included, that are going to see it probably multiple times.
Right.
You know, but that extra person or two, you know,
right,
adds up.
Yeah. All right.
That's where I would. So, okay.
You make a fair point.
Okay. Now, we agreed about a winning
what the wager was going to be.
So, if I were to win, we're going to have a
charity screening
of Spaceballs, and Pan and I are going to dress up like Lone Star and Barf, and be there to host this.
And this is going to be in January of 2020.
Okay.
And tickets will be $10 ahead and 100% proceeds. Penn Cinema will pay for the rights to the film, regardless of which one of us wins.
Mm-hmm.
And $10 ahead, 100% goes to the charity.
Yeah.
And I have yet to name, because we haven't really thought it through just yet, but next week, episode 7. Ooh, that's nice. I like how that works out for me. Next week, our own episode 7. We will announce, so if Avengers wins, if David wins, then we're going to dress up for Spaceballs.
Right.
And if I win, we will announce next week what we will be dressing up as.
Okay. I think this is great. This is so great. I'm all for it. So, okay. We saw Greta this week. This may be a first for us, because I feel like we've been on board for everything so far that we've kind of reviewed, at least on some level.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll see where we lay on this one.
We were kind of tentatively on board for Lego Movie. Neither one of us loved it.
Right.
But we were like, push comes to shove, I'm on board.
Yeah.
And then what did we do after that?
Alita, right?
Alita, we were on board. I was on board for Alita. What did we do last week?
Last week was Isn't It Romantic?
Isn't It Romantic, which we were both on board on.
So, Greta. Spoilers. From this point on, I'll make a note because people have been asking for where spoilers start.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's something that I've been hearing from people that they stop listening because they don't want to get spoiled on stuff and they don't know where to stop. So I'll put in the show notes.
Can I announce this spoiler alert?
Yeah.
All right. Spoiler alert. Don't waste your time.
What?
That came out overly harsh. I was just trying to be funny.
Yeah.
I didn't hate this movie.
I didn't hate it either, but at the same time, I didn't understand. It wasn't good.
Right.
There were so many things about this movie that made me go, "What?" And here's the moment I checked out, because I was kind of like wanted to know where it was going. The basic premise is Chloe Grace Moretz takes a purse that she finds back to a house. This lady Greta there,
right?
And they strike up a friendship. She's an older lady, and she starts stalking Chloe Grace Moretz hardcore. And then Chloe Grace Moretz finds out that it's like,
I don't think there's an N in Moretz.
Well, we'll just call her Chloe.
Okay.
Jerkowitz. Chloe Grace Jerkowitz.
You're Jerkowitz.
So she finds that there's this lady puts a bunch of purses out to get people to come over. Right.
That was the best scene in the whole movie.
Yes.
The best moment in the
whole. So
I'm sorry. That was one of my two scenes that I loved. when she discovers what's in the cabinet, mm-hmm. which we can say without ruining the movie. Like, I think let's just leave it at that. Let's not say what's in the cabinet.
Okay.
So even if you have listened past the spoiler alert, if you're going to go see this movie just because you love it and you're curious enough and you're interested and you want to go see it so you can correct us on what we missed, the moment when she opens the cabinet and sees what she sees, that was a great moment.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was super tense.
Yeah, chilling.
Super, super tense. So then she tries to ditch this lady, Greta.
Right.
And Greta starts stalking her and standing outside of her job and staring in the window and just being total creepo.
Right.
And while they were friendly, she helped Greta adopt a dog. And this is the point where I checked out. Greta's doing all of this crazy stuff. She's unable to get a restraining order on her. This lady's standing outside of her job. And then she goes, you know, I'm concerned about this dog. So she goes to her house to check on the dog. And I'm just like, what? Why? What are you doing? Why would you? You're opening the door for this lady to be like.
And why would you go to the house by yourself?
Yeah.
I mean, why would you go in the first place? But then if you're going to go, you go with your hot friend.
Right. That's at that moment, I turned to my buddy and I was like, what? He's like, I don't know.
I don't know.
That's when I was officially like, all right, this movie is kind of done for me. And then it kind of progressed kind of the way that you would think it would, you know, she captures her and holds her hostage and they're looking for her and her friend winds up busting her out. But, it never quite got more intense than that one scene for me,
right?
Except there was an exciting scene where she uses a rolling pin to do some action. That was the second point where I got crazy upset.
Me too. Me too. Yeah. I know exactly what you're going to say. You go ahead and say it, but okay. I know exactly what you're going to say. And I'll tell you ahead of time, I agree with you.
She can't get out of the front door. There's a giant bay window right next to the door. Can you break glass?
I can. Yes, I can.
Okay. I can break glass. And in this scene, she breaks a glass bowl.
Right. so we know that she can, too.
She can break glass.
Right.
Why didn't she just break the giant front window and get out?
Right. Instead. There's like 17 other places she could have gotten out, but instead she goes to the worst part of any house in the world. She goes down to the basement.
Why?
What?
Why not upstairs to like the jump out the window there?
Anywhere would have been better than the basement.
As
my father-in-law would say, I don't know.
Pen, this movie made me mad. Is there any redeeming qualities?
Here's the thing. Remember last week we spoke about how interesting it is when you have an experience, you watch a movie, you feel a certain way, and then you hear somebody else's opinion, and it causes you to rethink, right? I read a review of Greta after I saw it.
Okay.
You know how I feel about this movie. I don't need to restate that. If the movie was intended to be campy, does it make you feel better about it?
No.
Like, so in other words, it doesn't make any sense that she went down to the basement, but of course she had to go down to the basement so she could discover a bunch of other bodies that were maybe not even dead or maybe still alive, but don't worry, we won't ever come back to those bodies.
Right.
You know, that's going to be a plot point that just hangs out there forever. You know, we're never going to revisit that. I didn't. Here's my concerns about this movie. And I'm not smart enough to know. So, you know, what is it? podcast@penncinema.com.
Yeah.
Send me an email and spell it out. I'm not smart enough to know the first, I want to say, 20 minutes of the movie or so. Was that bad acting or bad writing?
Okay. Yeah. I was just thinking about this when you were talking about it. It was so forced. Like,
right.
They'd just be talking about, she's like, well, my mom died. It's like, where did that come from?
Right.
Like, I think it was dialogue because.
Yeah.
Chloe's a good actor.
Yeah.
This other lady, I never thought her role was good. I don't know if that was the role or her.
She's supposed to be like amazing. People love her. She's supposed to. I've never heard of her before.
Yeah.
But supposedly she's like this brilliant, like, I don't know, older. You know, she has this incredible credentials.
Really?
I've
never heard of her either. Yeah.
That doesn't mean she's not amazing, but I will say, when the train goes off the rails, so to speak, when she stabs the inspector with the needle and then she's dancing around barefoot, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was very creepy.
Like, very creepy and kind of crazy. It reminded me a little bit of, like, Hannibal Lecter, like, really, like, craziness. And that scene pleased me from a cinematic, you know, as a movie. It was an interesting sort of, like, okay, this lady's, like, really, she's not just violent, she's off the deep end, you know?
Yeah.
And I did, here's another thing that's redeeming, and maybe it's along the same lines of what I just said, but the whole significance of that piano tune that she played, it was like classical music, but also just a little bit simplistic, right? So it was almost like Pavlov's Dog. And then every time you heard it, like you got creeped out, you know? But that sort of segues into my whole problem with this film, my biggest problem with this film. At the beginning of this podcast, we talked about how much a good ending to a movie is really important to me.
Yeah.
You know, and the ending to The Drop was one of the best endings I ever saw. I hate in this movie a couple things. First of all, we never revisit the other victims, even though we're introduced to them in the middle of the movie. We never revisit the dad on screen. You can, I guess, presume that is a relationship that they heal or comes back to. I don't know. But the real thing that bothers me the most about the final conclusion of the final act of this movie is that the hero, Chloe, does nothing to save herself.
Yeah.
There's no actual act. And it's not that she doesn't try throughout the movie. There's a great scene you already spoke about with the rolling pin, and even though she goes to the basement like an idiot, you know. And yeah, after she clocks a lady in the head with the rolling pin, you're like, my thing, I got upset even before she went to the basement. I was upset. Why are you turning your back on this person?
Yeah.
Like, she's knocked
out. Finish her.
Right. Finish her. You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so then she gets, all right, so here's a spoiler, you know, and if you're really worried about spoilers, you should not listen to this next statement. When she ends up in the box, she never gets out of the box. Like, she doesn't do anything to get herself out of the box. The roommate, and I did appreciate this turn of events, that the roommate, like, just rode that subway for months and months and months trying to find this purse.
Right.
You know, and the roommate does come and save her, and that's great. But from a storytelling point of view, the hero of the movie, Chloe, does nothing to save herself. So other than being the victim of the crime, her character has not changed. She hasn't gone through a transformation. I like characters in the beginning of the movie. They have one set of qualities. They go through some sort of experience. There's a change for better or for worse. And at the end of the movie, now they're somehow changed from that experience.
Yeah.
Other than being a horrible victim, you know, she didn't find any inner qualities. She didn't discover any strengths on her own. Like, in my opinion, maybe I missed something. You know,
no. And along those lines, at the end, they both sit in front of the box. They're just like, get out of there.
Right.
What are you doing? What about the person in the basement who's half dead?
Right. Right. And I didn't like this movie, but one thing that I would have liked just the tiniest bit about it that would have made me feel like, I don't know, it would have been a fun artistic turn. What if, as they're getting ready to go to credits, remember at the end when they're getting ready to go to credits, you hear the thumping and you see the ladle, the spoon that was, no, I'm sorry, the Eiffel Tower that's through the lock thing. And every time she thumped it, the Eiffel Tower like moved a little bit. It would have been great if right before it goes to credits, she thumps it and the Eiffel Tower falls out, right? Because then you're like, even if it went to credits, that would have been like a Coen Brothers move. You know, you could imagine that after the movie's over, Greta gets out of the box and goes and gets her again. You know what I mean? Or some other thing. But
well, I think they were alluding to that. They just didn't actually show it falling out. Because it moves. Like, it's going to slide out.
I was watching it.
Yeah.
Like a hawk. Because I wanted it to fall out. And it moved twice. And then there were three more thumps. And it did not move even a fraction.
Even if it fell out. Right. I just don't understand how you get three of those latches.
Right.
Maybe
no,
one.
I know. But now we're talking about, like,
realism in this.
Minutia in a movie that has failed for the previous hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah. I don't know if we have a catchphrase for it or not. The opposite of being on board, other than just saying I'm not on board. I am not on board.
No,
for this movie.
We're just not on board.
We're just not.
It's too bad. It's all right.
Crazy thing is, the theater was fairly full.
Yeah, the movie did all right.
When I saw it. I mean, like, people wanted to see this movie. Now, because I had never heard of it before, you mentioned it last week, I didn't watch any trailers. I didn't know anything about anything. And I was like, let's go see this movie. And everyone was like, I don't want to see that movie. And I was like, well, okay, either the trailer's really creepy or it's really bad. So anyway, so we're not on board with Greta. So go see Free Solo this week if you can. And that's better use of your time. So coming towards the end here, let's go over listener feedback. You got anything in that category?
So, I mean, we got an email last week. We challenged. Remember, we were talking and we were like, you know, do you think anybody's still listening? Like, so we challenged, like, hey, if you made it all the way to the end of the episode, send us an email. So we got an email from this guy named Chris, and congratulations to Chris.
Hey.
And we told him that he would win not only a pair of passes to Penn Cinema.
Okay.
And it turns out that he likes the Penn Cinema Lititz location.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, of course, our Wilmington location and our Huntington Valley location, which I mentioned because I'm going to get to that in a second.
Okay.
But so Mr. Chris here, not only is he getting a pair of passes, but he is getting this genuine. I don't even want to spoil the surprise because I want him to see when he comes in, but I'm going to spoil the surprise so that our listeners can be jealous. He is getting this genuine Tyler Perry's A Madea Family Funeral box of tissues. Yes, and so that I can describe it, it's a little bit smaller than a square box of tissues like you might have in your pantry, and it is shaped very realistically in the shape of a church.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you pull the tissues out through, like, the chimney, and it's pretty neat.
This thing has been sitting on the table, and I legit just thought, like, a funeral home was promoting something because I didn't take the time to read it. And I was like, oh, somebody's, like, a funeral home must be advertising with Penn, and this is just what they left here.
Yeah.
This is great.
So you remember the old days and the Monday night movies when we used to do I used to do trivia.
Right. Uh-huh.
And as a prize, I always told everyone, the prize this week is this useless crap that's laying around the manager's office.
But this couldn't be that.
No.
This is
did I mention tissues? I mean, it's high end.
Yeah.
You know, it's shaped like a church. So along those lines, we have a Isn't It Romantic sweatshirt.
Oh.
For the first person who contacts us saying that they're still listening to this episode. And I have another prize that I want to share with our members. Now, this prize goes to the first person who – so the sweatshirt is useless crap that's laying around the office. So that's anybody.
Okay. All right.
But I have another – I have a book.
Okay.
That I didn't even open, even though I thought it looked really cool. And it's a book of Alita Battle Angel artwork.
Whoa!
Yeah, it's called Alita Battle Angel, The Art and Making of the Movie.
Okay.
It's heavy. It's a hard...
This is hardback. This is legit, guys.
Yeah, this is legit. It's the foreword is written by the director, Robert Rodriguez, and the afterword is written by John Landau. It looks really cool. And anybody who – the first person who writes us from Huntington Valley or Wilmington, I will deliver this to that theater with a pair of passes for you to come in and see that. So
Huntington Valley.
That's it, man. Wilmington. It's your moment to shine.
This is it. All right. Podcast at PennCinema.com. Just put in I did it.
That's the subject line. I rule. And the last listener note, shout out to Mr. Scott for sending us the Steven Spielberg link.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Scott.
Yeah, he's got my back. Although I did not totally appreciate the banter that you and Scott partook.
So Scott writes into this and I said, thanks, like the Grinch's heart. Penn's ego just grew 3 sizes.
Because the reason why you wrote that is because you recognized that Steven Spielberg and me think exactly alike.
Yep. I think the best part was you responded to thank you and then came back real quick. Wait a minute.
All right.
So I guess quickly here to wrap up the show, we've got our normal, what are you reading? What are you watching this week? What's going on in your life outside of the movie theater? You got your big thing this week, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay, so one last plug on that one.
Tuesday night, March 5th.
Okay.
So that'd be a tight turnaround if you're listening, if you're like an early listener, but if you're a regular listener, you might have just missed it. But Tuesday night, March 5th at the Parish Resource Center, which is out on Lincoln Highway East in Lancaster, I'm doing my speech about, it's not really a speech, it's a presentation about the intersection of faith and the movies. It's really interesting. It's one of my favorite topics. I've spoken about it quite a bit. This is the first time that I've been asked to do it with really like put some thought into it ahead of time. Yeah. Usually I just sort of talk off the top of my head and ramble on for a little while until time's up and then we're done and I take some questions and we go home. So this time I've gotten out my notes and I've pulled up some, so we can talk a little bit more about that. I'll let you know next week how it goes. But
okay, very cool.
It's, if you're not doing anything Tuesday night, it's $15 a head to get in, which of course benefits the Parish Resource Center, which is a nonprofit. And of course, none of that goes to me. I'm, you know, doing this to support them. And it's really interesting. And essentially, you know, my sort of the gist of what I'm talking about is that, you know, there's this latest thing over the last 5 or 6 years where movies get labeled as faith-based, you know, and my, my argument is that, you know, we're wrestling with issues of faith in all the good movies.
Right.
You know what I mean? Black Panther has some really interesting fundamental questions. But of course nobody's going to call that a faith-based movie, but it certainly raises some interesting questions. So anyway, it's an interesting topic, but, I just wanted to mention real quick, John Mulaney.
Okay.
He was on Saturday Night Live this week.
Yeah.
I was dying.
He is hilarious. I just recently watched his stand-up.
Oh my God.
Good. Yeah. So good. I didn't get to see the SNL stuff, though.
Yeah.
Some big highlights there?
No.
Just solid all the way through?
Just solid the whole way through. The guy was hilarious. His opening bit, his opening monologue was hilarious. Yeah, I thought he was really great. And then also The Losers on Netflix. I've not seen it, but I wrote it as my, like, what are we doing? Because I have it queued up. I've been spending any free time I've had lately, the last few days, I've been focused on getting my presentation ready, doing some research and sort of pulling up some old clips and old, you know, doing a lot of prep. But as soon as this is over Tuesday night, when I get home, I'm watching The Losers, which is appears to be a documentary about people who have lost sort of epic sports moments and how they have overcome those experiences to become stronger. And, you know, it's like the character we talked about in Greta where, you know, at the beginning they're one thing and they go through this great experience and then they come out the other side, you know, and
something
they're different,
else,
they're changed.
Huh. Very cool. Very cool. Anything else on your list there?
Nope.
Okay. I watched Jim Gaffigan's Noble Ape, his newest stand-up. I thought it was great. Jim Gaffigan can kind of be like the same all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And his last, at least his last one before this, I felt like wasn't really all that new. But this one was a nice influx of, of good humor. He deals with medical stuff, which is different than his normal just food things. And then I watched the first John Wick. I went and bought them like I said I would last time, two. I'd seen it. I see your note here. I'd seen the first one before. I haven't seen the second one.
What note?
I don't know what this is here. We'll just let it go.
We write up these show notes, and David writes, he's much more professional than I am, and he writes these very good thorough show notes. And when I print them out, I a lot of times like to add my own commentary to his notes. So he writes them one way, and then when we do the show, they appear another way.
Appear a total different way. Yep. It's about time that I watched that movie. I'm looking forward to watching the second one after watching the first. I read Invincible, the first compendium. Not much to say about that. And here's the big thing. There's a couple things about me, and I don't think you know about this. Like, if someone were to say, what are the three fandoms that define David? You'd probably be like Star Wars and I'm Dune. And you'd be partially right because it's Star Trek, it's Dune, and it's Farscape.
Ooh.
Farscape is almost on my list higher than Star Trek, which is crazy.
What?
It fights it. Do you know anything about this show?
Nah, I mean, if I'm about to.
Yeah, you're about to learn. It was made for Sci-Fi, the channel, in conjunction with the Jim Henson production.
Oh, love Jim Henson.
Two of the main characters are Muppets, which takes some getting used to. And it's just like very practical effect sci-fi with costumes and puppets. Yeah. And we don't have to get into it, but I love it. And so I have a long trip to Seattle coming and a long time on a plane, and I'm going to dip in and rewatch the series. So that's my plans.
When do you go to Seattle?
13th through the 17th.
So you're going to be able to see Captain Marvel before you leave?
Yeah.
So, all right, man.
Next week, Captain Marvel.
Yeah, I mean, so, that's the segue into our conclusion is, you know, that's where we're at. The whole entire movie industry, now that the weekend's over, is like just sitting still waiting until Thursday night.
Yeah. And I'm pumped.
I saw it last week.
And?
I am 100% on board. If I could be more than 100%, I would.
Okay.
I have nothing bad to say. Obviously, I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to take anything away for anybody, you know, for everybody else. But I'll just say... Great.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it Thursday. We'll be back next week. Captain Marvel, write us in. Let us know what you think of Captain Marvel. Good, bad, whatever.
Oh, that'd be great. Get some comments.
Yeah. podcast@penncinema.com. Thanks to everyone who's left reviews on iTunes and everyone who's written in with their encouragement. We do appreciate that. So once again, for the podcast, I'm David Moulton.
And I'm Penn Ketchum. Take care and party on.
Thanks for joining us this episode. Our hosts would love to hear from you. To contact the show with your thoughts and reviews, email podcast@penncinema.com. This podcast is a production of Penn Cinema. Escape to the movies at Penn Cinema, featuring crisp digital projection, killer sound, reserved seating, and premium power recliners. With locations in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Wilmington, Delaware, and Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania. Showtimes and tickets available at www.penncinema.com.